Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Faith on the Line with Amazing Discoveries. Brian Newman continues his series on music and today looks at how the origins of pulse rhythm came into the modern styles of music that we have today. Brian used to be a rock musician and for 16 years worked directly in the music industry. Brian now lectures worldwide on the effects of music and teaches Christians biblical principles to apply in choosing good music for life. And now, here's Brian.
Welcome again to Voices of a Dying Planet series that we are doing. And I would like to look today into, and of course we are going into our third presentation in this segment of our series. And maybe even before I mention these things, let's just go to do a little bit of a recap in the series so far. We started off by posing some questions with regards to the origins behind our modern music. And we looked at some of the connections with sun worship and how music was used in ancient pagan traditions, particularly once getting back to the African connection in this, because this is ultimately how it found its way into our Western forms of music and the whole concept of sun worship. We also looked at some of the effects of the different kinds of music on the human organism that were used in the pagan ritual worships, and indeed from a scientific point of view how they affect the human organism. And I mentioned also that today, in our next study now, we want to have a look at how it actually came through to Western society and to our music of our present time. In fact, to be able to do this, we need to go back a little bit in history. We need to go to a time of the slave trade era, where the slaves were brought from Africa to places like Santo Domingo, Martinique, Haiti, in South America, and Cuba, and so on, and how they brought with them these pagan concepts of worship and music and incorporated it eventually into the music which they started using in that time. The slaves ultimately came from these different islands through to North America through a place which was known as New Orleans. And in New Orleans there was a place called Congo Square, and I'll make a lot of reference to Congo Square and New Orleans as we continue. But it was in the 1800s that the slaves from Africa were sold to the white merchants in the West Indies, Haiti, Cuba, and so on, that as I've mentioned. And the African slaves that were taken from their native lands, of course, clung to their drums and the religious ceremonies that had become a part of their culture, religious culture particularly. They passed on their tribal songs and their rhythms from generation to generation. And by the way, if you're interested in the information, you could look into some very interesting books written by, one of them is called Hear That Long Snake Moan by Michael Ventura, Whole Earth Review, Spring and Summer 1987, and you will find very, very interesting references, of course, to the history behind these things. So they brought these things from Africa. And of course, under the impact of slavery and other religious influences, and of course the poverty that they were exposed to as well, their religions were forced to undergo some changes as well as the music. The result of these changes would eventually become known as voodoo, from the term voden. In fact, it was at this time where the term voodoo came into being. In Africa it existed in the form of voden, because the voden were the spirits or the demons, the spirits of the ancestors, which would come in and take possession of the worshippers in the voodoo ritual service. But this is where voodoo first of all became coined as a term which was connected to the worship experiences. Many of the pagan practices that survived in the West Indies were not allowed at first by the American slave owners in North America. And of course, originally buying slaves from Haiti, Martinique, and Santo Domingo and these places was actually prohibited. But of course, at this time, because the drums were forbidden by the slave owners, the slaves found other means of maintaining the tribal rhythms. Yes, one way in which they did it is they used what they called syllabic vocalization. And that really is much like the concept behind modern day rap music, where you use, or when you are singing or speaking the words, it's in a very rhythmical, syllabic kind of way. And you know, a lot of people, when they look at rap music today, they think, well, hey, well, rap music's something new. It's not new, it was practiced. In fact, it's even practiced in Africa in many of the voodoo ritual styles of worship, if one may call it that. And another thing that was developed during that time was what was called tap dancing. And it was actually after a slave revolution that began in Haiti on August 14 in 1791, and it actually took place at a voodoo ritual ceremony, that the ban forbidding the purchase of West Indian slaves was actually lifted at that time, and many of the slaves then fled to New Orleans, the city which I have already mentioned in North America. This immigration is cited as the beginning of organized voodoo in that city. That is where voodoo ritual began in North America, and then from there it spread to other parts and became a common practice amongst the slaves during the course of that time. After 1817, Congo Square, which is in the heart of New Orleans, became the gathering place for slaves that had fled from the West Indies. And of course that was New Orleans, the city. It was in Congo Square that ritual African music underwent an interesting change, a kind of metamorphosis. In the tribal ceremonies, there was no audience. Everyone was actually a participant. But in Congo Square now, due to the changes which were going to take place, African music was put into a Western form of presentation. So they would start using instruments which were more Westernized. And of course, because they were not allowed to openly practice voodoo ritual, it some kind of became like a concert which the musicians would put on. The people appeared to be a part of an audience who were watching the music presentation or concert. But although the religious African element was still present, it now became a kind of secret within the music rather than the apparent object of the music. Because the visible elements of ritual worship were not actually seen, they were hidden, a much wider audience now began to accept this African form of pagan music that of course was maintained the same musical elements that were used in the voodoo ritual kind of music that was used in Africa and the other slave countries like Martinique and Santo Domingo and so on. During this time as well, something else interesting happened, is that there were some dances that started developing in New Orleans. And some of these dances were named after some of the voodoo gods of the ritual worship. And you can read about this in the face... In a book called Face the Music by Leonard J. Seidel, and by Grace Unlimited Publications, Springfield, VA, and 1988. And Yari speaks about some of the dances that were named after the voodoo gods. For example, the dance, the Samba, was dedicated to the god Simbi, who was actually the god of seduction and fertility. The dance, the Conga, was named after the African demon Congo. And the Mamba, which was another dance, was named after the voodoo priestess who offered sacrifices to demons during the ritual worships that took place. So all the different things which eventually became incorporated into Western dance and in Western music found its roots here in North America, on Congo Square in New Orleans, and eventually found its way via certain forms of music, of course, which we're going to discuss and look into just now. In fact, some of these forms of music and things which came from originally from voodoo ritual, which were now being incorporated into Western music, also had an effect on the worship of Western Christian organizations, because they were starting to become accustomed to it in their secular music. Invariably it started having an impact. In fact, originally the black people in the United States were not allowed to have their own churches until the 1840s. But by the time the Civil War ended, black churches were springing up everywhere, all over the United States. And although the basic doctrines of these black Christian churches were Puritan, their form or style of worship was distinctly African. The style or form of Southern fundamentalism, as we know it today, came straight out of these churches that developed in that time. The camp meeting movement drew thousands of people to vast outdoor revivals, sometimes lasting several days at a time. And although the slaves were separated from their owners at these meetings, they vastly outnumbered them. Their style of worship was so overwhelming in its intensity and duration that the white people's worship was drowned out. While the slave owners were singing hymns in careful measures, their slaves would be shouting out the same songs and beating out counter rhythms on tambourines and gourds and logs. And of course, let me give you the source here. Hole in Your Soul by Martha Bales, University of Chicago Press, and also Face the Music by Leonard J. Seidel, book I've already mentioned, is where I'm getting a lot of this information from. And of course they are available in other historical writings that speak about the early Southern fundamentalist churches and the churches that grew out of that time. It goes on to record that eventually this form of worship was absorbed into the Protestant church liturgy, infusing these voodoo-style rhythms into their praise and worship services as well. It was at this time, during the mid-to-late 1800s, that America witnessed the frenzy of hysterical revival meetings. This was the beginning of what became known as the Holy Flesh Movement, which incorporated the Holy Flesh concept and other doctrines derived from voodoo ritual. The symbols of voodoo changed, but the frenzy involved in the style of worship and musical expression remained intact. For this system of worship, the visible possession, in other words, visible manifestations of the speaking in tongues and physical manifestations by the Holy Ghost, was as much a formal goal in the religion of the Southern Holiness churches as possession was in voodoo ritual. The ecstasy of speaking in tongues, the uttering of unintelligible syllables, as I've already mentioned, that accompanied this Pentecostal movement, and the other physical manifestations of possession were the same symptoms as manifest by those people who became possessed by gods in African ritual ceremonies. The religion, based on ecstasy of feeling, in other words, physical, remember the pagan worship was physical manifestations. So this religion based on ecstasy of feeling was a survival of, if not the rites, then at least the religious behavior of a pagan worship form that believes in the crossroads where the physical and spiritual worlds meet and blend into one. Very interesting. Before in the Protestant churches, this had not become, physical manifestations were not actually a predominant aspect of worship. What Protestant worship really based its worship on was the Word of God, on truth. In other words, an intellectual, spiritual understanding of truth, rather than an emotional, physical, excitable kind of feeling when it came to religion. In fact, it's recorded in the book History of Christianity. This source tells us about the history. It says, the modern Pentecostal movement grew out of the holiness movement of the late 19th century. The Kentucky Revival, which took place at that time, was characterized by falling, jerking, rolling, running, whining, whooping, holy laughter, and barking exercises. Many physical, and all of these things which I'm reading here to you, you can go to Africa today and you can look at a voodoo ritual ceremony that takes place, and every single one of these physical manifestations are found in voodoo ritual. And the one thing that is used to underline and to create the atmosphere for the excitement is the language of music and the rhythms that are incorporated into it. Of course, it not only had an impact on the religious aspect of Christian music, but it also had an impact on the contemporary secular music which we were listening to. And so these same elements, ultimately through the blues, and the actual term blues means blue devils. It came from Elizabethan phrase, blue devils, which means a fit of bad temper or melancholy. And blues, of course, traditionally in the early days was a secular kind of music which belonged to theatres and clubs and brothels and drinking halls and concerns of the flesh. The blues, of course, intrinsic in it had this swing kind of rhythm. Now, of course, there are different kinds of blues rhythms that are used, but the element of swing, of syncopation, was a very important inherent part in blues music. And the subject matter, of course, of the early blues music often expressed betrayal and mistrust, perversion, and very often sexual desire as well. The sexual nature, in fact, of many of the early blues songs that were sung were deliberately veiled in African colloquialisms and terms, so that those people who didn't understand the the language or the terms would not know what the people were talking about. They were hidden from, for example, the Western audience. So as a result of the hiding of the terminology, and of course the more westernizing of the style of music, the white listeners who heard the music, the Westerners in other words, couldn't understand it, and of course ultimately they became more accepting of the music. But it is interesting when you start looking at the terminology that was used in those early forms of music that were veiled, that had pagan, in other words devilish, in fact satanic connotations, and very often sexual connotations, if you look at those, that there are still the same terminologies that survive even to our present time in many of the forms of music which we are listening to. And just by way of sharing a few of them, you might have heard of the term funky. Well, funky, somebody might say, hey, play that funky music or that funky rhythm. But funky really means is positive sweat or strong smell with, of course, very strong sexual connotations. And of course, I leave that up to your imagination. I don't want to go into detail of what that means, but it had to do with the smell of a sexual intercourse. That's what funky meant. Another term was the term mojo. And that was a soul or an object which was invested with spiritual power and the capacity to heal or influence. The mojo also became a symbol for the male sexual organ. And that's why you remember that song in the early 60s spoke about getting your mojo working. Well, this gives you some ideas to perhaps what was being referred to in the music. Another term which was used was boogie. Now, somebody may say, let's boogie, and people think, well, that's let's dance. But there's another term which refers to boogie as being the boogie man. That is the spook or the demon, the boogeyman. Boogie literally means devilishly good. It means something which is connected to the devils or the spirits or the demons. So if you had to translate it directly into their term so you would understand, somebody may say, well, let's play funky rhythm. That means a rhythm which has the sexual connotation, that excitement intrinsic in the rhythm. And that will make the people boogie, in other words, will make them feel devilishly good. And then, if they are booging and feeling devilishly good, in other words, maybe they will get their mojos working. If you understand now, this is of course just an illustration of how the terminology may actually be worked, may actually be used. Another term was a term juke, hence the term ultimately which became the jukebox. But the word juke means bad or devilish, hence the term jukebox, which really meant the devilish box. It was the box with the devils in it. Remember, in pagan ritual, as I have already explained, they believed that it was through the music itself which was the primary source of the occult power. It was the music that facilitated the experience of the crossroads between the physical and the spiritual world. In other words, it was through the music that the demons or the spirits of the ancestors would come and take possession of the person in the music worship. That's why the jukebox was the box with the devils in, with the spirits in, because it was the box that had the music in. Do you understand how the connection is made? And these are all the terminologies which are still used in our present time. Another term had to do with a form of music that eventually came out of blues, and we will study that in a little bit more detail in a while, but it was a form of music which was called jazz. Most people don't understand what the term jazz means. Literally, jazz means an immoral act, or is another term for sexual intercourse. In other words, jazz means sex. In fact, the very term rock or rock and roll means sexual intercourse. In fact, in one of the rock and roll magazines, or rock music industry magazines, a magazine called Ultra Kill magazine, it speaks there about the devil, and they pose the question about the devil in the magazine. They say, but what about the musical connection with all of this, with the devil in other words? And they say, well, even before heavy metal, the devil took an interest in rock and roll. The very term rock and roll started life as a black American expression for sex. And it goes on to say, and sinful procreation has been the devil's province for a long, long time. In fact, it was Rolling Stone's manager who said that rock is sex, and you have to hit teenagers in the face with it. So here is some very, very interesting terminology which gives you a view into the roots of where these concepts and ideas came from. In other words, the very music which we are exposed to today, that which makes part of the music, was actually inspired directly from a pagan system of worship that believed in the crossroads between the physical and spiritual worlds. It amazes me that today you will actually have Christians who will talk about Christian rock or Christian rock and roll or Christian jazz and so on, without actually realizing what they are really saying. Really, what they're saying is Christian sex, because that's exactly what the terms really mean. Remember what Jesus said in our text in the beginning of this segment of our study. He said that by their fruits you will know them. And then he said, do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Where are they picking their fruit? From the vine which is Jesus Christ, or the orchard of Satan? The inspiration here is coming from a very interesting source, and we need to study it in more detail. So thank you for your time today. We will go into a very, very interesting part as we go closer to what the industry itself has to tell us in the next portion of our study. So thank you and join me next time. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Faith on the Line with Amazing Discoveries. To order a cassette copy of this message for a suggested gift of $7, please call Amazing Discoveries at 1-866-572-9457. Another resource we are featuring this month is Brian Newman's book entitled From Rock and Roll to Rock of Ages. This book is $17 Canadian and shares Brian's personal testimony of how the Lord changed his life from rock musician to being broken on the rock, which is Jesus Christ. Brian's book also helps provide biblical insight into choosing good music and covers many of the insights you'll be hearing over the next few weeks. This book can be purchased by calling Amazing Discoveries at 1-866-572-9457. To write to us, please send your letters to Amazing Discoveries, Box 26012, Richmond, BC, V6Y3V3. And for our U.S. listeners, please write to Box 4480, Blaine, Washington, 98231. You may also visit us online at www.amazingdiscoveries.org, where you can listen to past radio programs or watch video clips on a wide variety of Bible topics. Once again, that's amazingdiscoveries.org. We'd just like to thank you for your support of Amazing Discoveries. Your support will help others be edified and strengthened in their walk with Jesus Christ. I'm Jason Hernberg. Be sure to tune in tomorrow as Brian presents some interesting information on what the actual musicians themselves say about the industry they are in. We'd like to leave you with a song now produced by Brian, entitled Nearer My God to Thee. Have an excellent day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Oh,
free.